Josh Hastin here, Israel Uncensored, on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. It is Monday, the 25th of May, 2020, the 2nd of Sivan, 5780. Hope you are doing well in your part of the world. Hope you are safe. Hope you are healthy in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic. And I know here in Israel, thank God, things are much, much better. The country is, every day it seems, is opening up a little bit more. I am staring outside at a beautiful, beautiful day here in Jerusalem, the eternal capital of the Jewish people. And things aren't back to normal 100%. There's still a sense in the air that the traffic is lighter. Things are not 100%, but nevertheless, we have to really, really appreciate the fact of where we are. And sadly, I know a lot of the world is not in the situation we're in here in Israel. I mean, things are opening up each and every day. You can check the Ministry of Health website, and we'll talk about specifics in a few minutes, but transportation is opening up, the schools are now open, the beaches are open. People are taking precautions, wearing the masks, and trying to maintain the social distancing. But things are getting there. Things are moving in the right direction, thank God. Let's hope there isn't any type of second wave here in Israel. And I hope the first wave goes away in many, many places around the world. And I was actually trying to figure out, there's definitely a hand of God in it in terms of how we were able to come out of the situation we were in. But I'm talking about the fact that just in Israel, we are so, for better or for worse, we are so used to crises. This is a country that's 72 years young in modern times. Of course, we're 3,000 years old, but just think of what we have gone through over the last 72 years with all of the wars and rockets being fired at us and terror attacks and emergencies. Israel is, if I'm not mistaken, is still technically, officially in a state of emergency. We have been that way ever since we were established back in 1948. But a friend of mine was talking about the resiliency. And coronavirus is not an exception. In other words, the reason why you walk down the streets and there are people out there now, even with the masks and everything, is that Israelis are used to going through these traumas and getting back to business as soon as possible. And I said before, for better or for worse, because I remember in the days of the terror attacks when I made Aliyah, when I moved to Israel during the Oslo Award, Oslo War, what some call the Second Intifada, where a bus would blow up, there'd be a terror attack, and within an hour, there'd be people waiting for that same bus line at the same stop where the attack took place. Literally just an hour later. So on one hand, there's a great deal of and sense of resiliency. And on the other hand, sometimes I think we have to slow down just a bit. And that's why, for me personally, this period is much more difficult than the actual quarantine period, which was basically, it seems like yesterday, but it really was, last week, last month, over the last couple of months. This, to me personally, is the most challenging, because there are all these question marks. Are we moving too fast? Are things opening too fast? So far, everything seems to be headed in the right direction in terms of the curve being flattened and all the numbers and statistics they put out and the active cases of coronavirus on the down swing, on the downturn, and everything's headed in the right direction. So let's keep on keeping on, and let's hope it continues that way and we don't have any other waves. And then I'll be able to relax a little bit more as we head towards this, new normal. things will never be the same, I don't think, ever. I mean, we may get to somewhat the same, but I don't think anything will ever be the same. I don't know, maybe years from now when there's a proven vaccine and everyone is headed back. I'm not, and again, you know, we really need to reflect on this period and ask ourselves, do we want things to go back to exactly the way they were? And I think the answer is no. I think we really have to learn from this entire experience and really try to apply it to our lives as we head forward. And for everybody, it's a different experience, and it's something that each individual can learn from in his or her way. But I don't think things will be exactly the same, nor should they be. And as I'm staring out this beautiful, beautiful Jerusalem day, with the wind blowing, I mean, I can hear the birds chirping. There's still somewhat of a sense of quiet from where I'm sitting. Whereas in normal times, perhaps, there would be a lot of people moving around and a lot of action. And now it's really just the wind and the birds from my vantage point right here. Anyway, I just wanted to share that with you here this morning with, as I'm looking outside, the Israeli flag blowing in the wind. We just celebrated Jerusalem Day, the reunification of our capital in 1967, along with the liberation of Judea, Samaria, the Golan, and other parts of the country. We just had that, and now this week we're already back into holiday mode as we head towards the Chag of Shavuot, where we commemorate the Jews receiving the Torah at Mount Sinai thousands of years ago, but obviously so relevant each and every day here in the land of Israel and around the world. So I'm going to go ahead and get to all the latest in the news, but I just started the show off, I guess, a little bit differently. Some personal reflections here from Jerusalem as we head through this COVID-19 coronavirus together, because no one is exempt from this reality. Not one person in the world. This applies to each and every individual out there. Anyway, on that note, turning to the news, front page of today's Jerusalem Post, of course, defendant number one, Benjamin Netanyahu, on Sunday yesterday became the first sitting prime minister in the history of the country to enter a courthouse under indictment. He is facing charges of bribery, fraud, and breach of trust. Speaking outside the courthouse, Netanyahu said, "Broadcasting his trial was necessary so there would be full transparency and the public would know the entire truth behind his cases. He repeatedly charged that his criminal cases were intended to bring him down because he is a right-winger. The cases against him are ridiculous and delusional and had been tainted," said Netanyahu, adding that the announcement of the indictments against him were intended to prevent him from winning the last two elections. That effort did not work, and he only got more support and a vote of confidence in himself. Speaking alongside Likud ministers and MKs, Netanyahu said it was a farce that after enduring decades of bad press, he was being charged with receiving positive news coverage. He quoted legal scholar attorney Alan Dershowitz as saying, "If Netanyahu would be convicted on that charge, it would send a bad precedent internationally." So Alan Dershowitz, who is not known to be a right winger by any means, perhaps he's gone more to the right in recent years, saying that this is a terrible precedent for Israel and the world. That's just one of his charges, is that he was guilty of trying to receive good press. And now this is a long drawn out process, folks. Yesterday was only the first day of this indictment, of this trial rather. And this thing could take months and weeks and years before the judges rule on the fate of the prime minister. Will he remain our prime minister? Will he be forced to step aside? And all of this after such a long period without a government here in Israel. Now we have a government, and now we're dealing with this as well. Reported by the Jewish press here, Knesset Speaker Yariv Levin from Likud posted on Facebook yesterday saying the opening day of Prime Minister Netanyahu's trial will be remembered as one of the low points of the Israeli legal system. The charges against him are unprecedented in Western democracies. Levin continued, saying their realm, if at all, should have been the ethical and non-criminal sphere, and it's no wonder that the world's top jurists have been harshly criticizing it, referencing Dershowitz and others. So there we have one opinion, and there's so many opinions out there. There were demonstrators pro Netanyahu yesterday, and just on the other side of the road, I guess, were demonstrators against Netanyahu, calling on the prime minister to be removed. On the right, they're saying this is a witch trial against the right wing, even though some may debate whether Netanyahu is truly representative of the right wing based on his policy. Some would say he isn't. Some would say he's more to the center, but for all practical purposes, in the larger scheme, he is being viewed as a right winger who was on trial because of his politics and not because he broke any laws. That is the logic, and that is the reasoning and the rationalization coming from the Likud and others who think this is a witch hunt. And then again, you have those on the other side who say that nobody's above the law. The prime minister perhaps broke the law. He definitely, in their opinion, is deserving of this trial. And many pundits I'm reading this morning are talking about long-term how this will damage the fabric of the state of Israel. People will lose confidence in whether it's the politicians or the judicial system or what have you. And they're saying that nothing good can come out of it, whether he is found guilty or acquitted. Everybody loses in this long and drawn out process. But it is the first time that we have seen anything like this here in the state of Israel with a sitting prime minister entering the courthouse facing indictment. We had former Prime Minister Olmert actually went to jail, was convicted, but that happened after he was already no longer prime minister. So again, this is going to go on for weeks, years, who knows? We'll see what happens. And hopefully we will be able to heal as a country regardless of what the decision is. And I'm going to talk a little bit more, and the last thing I'm going to discuss later on is how truly united we have become. And I've seen it before here in Israel, whether it was 2014 and the kidnapping of the boys and the murder of the boys and the falling war in Gaza. I've seen the unity here before, and I'm going to give you another example of it. Just hang in there. Don't go anywhere. We'll get to that as well. In other news here, the J-Post reports and many others reported over the weekend, the top religious official of the Republic of Iran, the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, over the weekend threatening the state of Israel, saying that, quote, the Zionist regime is a deadly cancerous tumor in the region. It will undoubtedly be uprooted and destroyed. There he is threatening the state of Israel. And I saw something also the other day where some of his propaganda, which he released, was very reminiscent of Hitler, of course. And people say, no, he's just against Israel. He's not against the Jews. Yeah, right. He is the leading anti-Semite in the world today. The religious, spiritual leader of Iran. And Prime Minister Netanyahu fired back, saying anyone who threatens Israel is in danger. He warned, responding, making his comments at the opening of Sunday's cabinet meeting, following what the leader of Iran said over the weekend. Again, this is not the first time that Iran, I mean, this happens, nearly daily, but this is a special occasion because this was Jerusalem Day. For Jerusalem Day in Israel, it's a celebration of liberation. Jerusalem Day in Iran is a means to rile up the general public against Israel. But I know, and I'm convinced, and if anyone out there is listening from Iran, I'm convinced that the Iranian people know what the reality is and that Israel is not the enemy of the Iranian people. And I hope one day the people over there who know right from wrong and have not been brainwashed by the propaganda are able to overthrow this tyrannical, horrible, evil regime and overthrow these mullahs. One day, please God, it'll happen. But again, more threats against the state of Israel, which is not a rare occurrence, but this one being more special, I guess, because it is it came on Jerusalem Day, our Jerusalem Day and their Jerusalem Day, polar opposites, that's for sure. Turning to the Israeli policy, or stated policy, we'll see what happens, of applying sovereignty over Judea and Samaria. The J Post reported over the weekend that a group of 18 Senate Democrats have sent a letter to Prime Minister Netanyahu and alternate Prime Minister Gantz, urging them not to move forward with annexation on Israeli communities in Judea and Samaria. A quote from the letter says, "A deep commitment to Israel's security and a shared set of democratic values are foundational elements of the close relationship between our countries. We are therefore concerned that unilateral annexation puts both Israel's security and democracy at risk." So Israel, let me get this straight, Israel's security is at risk, or would be at risk, if we annex or apply Israeli sovereignty over Judea and Samaria. That can't be more far from the truth. In every single case, in every case where Israel has made gestures of land for peace, those areas have become launch pads for terrorism, whether it's in Gaza, whether it's in Hebron, Judea, Samaria, wherever it is, Lebanon, wherever Israel has made concessions in the form of land, those have become launching pads. So how can you tell me that applying sovereignty over our communities will put Israel's security at risk? Imagine if Israel agrees to turn over territories to full PA control, whereas the IDF could no longer enter those areas if there was, let's say, God forbid, a ticking time bomb, as they say, someone who is on his way to carry out a terror attack. The way things are now, in Areas A, what is known as Area A under the Palestinian Authority, the PA has, or is supposed to be in charge of, both municipal and security control over those areas. That being said, as a result of Israel's military operation at the start of the, or rather as a result of the Oslo War, the Second Intifada, the IDF, ever since then, over the last almost two decades, has had full access, if necessary, to go into Area A and take care of the terrorists. Each and every night, I've talked about this before, each and every night, the IDF goes into these villages and arrests suspected terrorists. It doesn't make front page of the news, but it happens each and every night. Imagine a situation where Israel could no longer go into these villages and make these arrests. And you're saying that will improve our security? This is absolute, absolute nonsense. Okay? And they go on here in this letter, these Democratic senators, talking about, of course, the creation of a Palestinian state, which would be an existential threat to the state of Israel. It would be committing suicide, in my opinion. And of course, they bring up all this democracy talk. Yeah, like the Abbas regime, which hasn't had an election in, what, 14 years? Like, they're a true democracy. The regime which arrests journalists, which arrests those who seek true cooperation with Israelis. These people are our peace partners. Why would these Democratic senators try to push a failed policy, which has been going on now for, it's been going on for 25 years, a failed policy which legitimizes the Palestinian Authority, which incites to terror and violence against Israel each and every day? Why do they deserve a state, which of course they've rejected time and time again, any form of state? Why keep pushing down this path? We all know the definition of insanity is repeating the same thing over and over, hoping for different results. That's not the case. So leave us alone, please. You Democratic senators here who think you know what's best from 6,000 miles away when you really don't. Okay? And another aspect of this is they keep saying that they're opposed to unilateral actions by either party, Israel or the PA, We're against unilateral actions. Well, they had no problem when Israel in 2005 took every Jew out of Gaza unilaterally. There was not one complaint saying, oh, this was done unilaterally. It shouldn't have been done. When Israel is willing to make concessions, they have no problem with any unilateral move. This is complete hypocrisy. And of course, that was a terrible mistake that Israel made. Israel should not be let off the hook for making that mistake. But that being said, these are hypocrites, and their true goal, the fact that they were quiet then, when Israel makes concessions, their true goal is to force Israel to make more and more concessions. Okay, they have no problem with unilateral action as long as it's Israel not applying sovereignty over our biblical heartland, Judea and Samaria. If we give up those areas unilaterally with coordination, collaboration, whatever it is, they have no problem with that. That is the point. This is who we're dealing with, all right? The headline here in the J Post, UN coronavirus aid going to Palestinian terrorling groups. Here is an article which talks about millions of dollars of international funding set to go to the average Arab living in Judea and Samaria under the PA, diverted for funding of terror, the money taken by the PFLP terror organization. This is based on a report by NGO Monitor, pointing out that the organization and UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, have been sending them money, and the money is being diverted towards organizations with links to terrorism. So what are these PA related organizations? What do they value? What's most important for them? Not fighting corona. It's siphoning off this money, which is supposed to help people in this time of crisis, siphoning off and using it for terror purposes. It's not the first time we've seen something like this. But these are the people who the Democratic senators want us to deal with. Okay, PFLP, another branch within the PLO. You have Fatah and the PFLP. These are all terror organizations with different names, different initials. But they're one and the same. Their goal is the destruction of the state of Israel. And these Democratic senators want us to deal with those who divert funds supposed to go to corona and are going to terror instead. Another sad example of our neighbors, unfortunately, the Jewish press reports this morning that while the entire world was holding its breath following the progress of the coronavirus pandemic, with millions of Israeli citizens in quarantine, the PA seized the opportunity to illegally dump millions of gallons of garbage in Area C. Those are areas in Judea and Samaria under full Israeli control. This reported by, this was a Regavim, the organization Regavim. You ever heard of them? Check them out. A report done by that organization yesterday, the results yesterday, indicating that only in a few weeks, while everyone was quarantined at home, millions of gallons of garbage from the Arab cities Ramallah and El Bira were dumped into a quarry near the Binyamin Industrial Zone. Thousands of trucks took advantage of the temporary lull and law enforcement monitoring, pouring their contents from the top of a cliff straight into this quarry. Should the Israeli authorities not do something about it, thousands of tons of garbage will be set on fire and will burn days and nights, making the area's Jewish inhabitants a living hell and creating a huge environmental damage to the air and to the soil. Whether it's illegal building, which the Arabs carry out with support, by the way, from the EU, when Israel is celebrating holidays like Passover, and those who are in charge of inspecting those areas are having Passover Seder, that's when these people act. That's when the PA builds illegal structures. That's when the PA dumps 2.2 million gallons of garbage illegally. I mean, where are the environmentalists here? Why isn't everyone, you know, Save the Whales and everyone, Greenpeace and all these organizations, why aren't they screaming from the rooftops, This is an environmental disaster. This is air pollution. This is damaging people's ability to breathe. Okay, where are all these groups? Let's see if they respond to this criminal activity undertaken by those under the PA. Just a couple other things here before we go for today. We started off by talking about the lifting of restrictions here in Israel. It's just it's unbelievable how we're able to continue down this path of lifting of restrictions. Transportation Minister Miri Regev and Health Minister Yuli Edelstein, reported by Israel National News, reached an agreement under which trains will resume operating according to the pre-lockdown schedule on June the 8th. June the 8th, trains once again will open up here in Israel, and all these different restrictions, the amount of passengers they're allowed, how far away everyone has to sit from each other. Minibuses and shared taxis were allowed to travel as well with 75% capacities. Private taxis allowed to accept up to two passengers in the back seat. All these restrictions are being eased, which have been in place since the start of this corona. But we are headed, as I said before, in the right direction. Just hope it's not too fast. Things are looking positive. Please God, they should stay the same. One last story here. The question here asked by Israel National News: why did Aviv Geffen cry? Do you know who Aviv Geffen is? He is an Israeli singer. Very, very popular singer. He has been for decades here. So he was interviewed on one of Israel's main TV news stations yesterday about one topic, about performing during Corona. And then he broke down. I didn't see the whole video, but I started watching it. I'm going to have to watch the whole video. He broke down, Aviv Geffen, okay, about an entirely, almost completely different matter. So here's the story. During the Corona crisis, he appeared at the outdoor amphitheater, the Amphi Shuni, without a crowd, okay? He did one of these live broadcasts to try to raise spirits here in Israel. And what Aviv Geffen did was I didn't even know this happened. He dedicated a song with love to the residents of Bnei Brak. Bnei Brak, of course, the ultra-Orthodox city just outside of Tel Aviv. At that time, they were receiving ugly attacks since some of the city's residents had been accused of violating lockdown measures. I mean, you had these horrible videos which seemed to be picking on the residents of Bnei Brak, ignoring the fact that perhaps other communities were violating quarantine rules. The focus was on the ultra-Orthodox. So Aviv Geffen dedicates a song to the residents of Bnei Brak. This is the story he's telling the interviewer. He left the stage and he saw he had 420 messages on his phone. So he says that he started opening them, scrolling, and someone had somehow gotten his phone number and passed it out to the residents of Bnei Brak. And the residents of Bnei Brak called Aviv Geffen, and Aviv Geffen cried and couldn't stop crying from the love and the heartfelt messages which he got from the people of Bnei Brak. Now, for those of you who know Aviv Geffen, Aviv Geffen has been the poster boy, again, for years and years, the poster boy of the so-called left wing in Israel, the anti-religious, the anti-God, all these labels, and perhaps it's even unfair that I characterize him as such. But he basically has been the poster boy for all those things, for anti-religion, okay, and certainly anti-Judea and Samaria, anti-Haredi, ultra-Orthodox, all these different things. So here he is crying. Not only was he crying during the interview, but he was crying when he got off that stage after dedicating that song and receiving over 400 messages of thanks. Okay, 4 o'clock in the morning, he's still up there on that stage crying, and the theater staff told him to go home. So the interviewer, Dana Weiss, wondered, why, Aviv, why did you cry then, and why are you crying now during the interview? And he answered the following. He said, quote, "For years we learned how to hate the other. He's religious, he's secular. I too was a soldier in this game. Suddenly I saw the other. So how did the corona change me? Just like this, I learned to respect. A flame of love, simply amazing, was lit. I cannot even describe it in words, only in tears. Unbelievable. And again, this, by the way, is on Israel National News, as reported, according to this, by Sivan Rahav Meir, a very popular journalist for Channel 12 News and an inspirational figure in her own right. So she reported this and was printed by Arut Sheva, Israel National News. And my message after hearing the story is, this is the ultimate example of what this horrible corona, this horrible virus gave to us. The ability to see the other. The ability to see the other side. And I don't know, is Aviv Geffen going to now become a religious or a traditional or observant Jew? I don't know, and I don't care. That's his business. I'm not asking him to do so. But the fact that this, as he admitted, the poster boy, the soldier in this game, the soldier of dislike, of disdain for others, if Aviv Geffen is able to see the other side, then we are headed in the right direction in terms of unity amongst the Jewish people. If all of us, and again, I myself, I'm sure, have many times been guilty of berating those who have different political opinions from myself, Jews who identify as being to the left, and it's something I have to work on as well. But if Aviv Geffen can do it, we all can do it. This is a real inspiration. For those of you who are not familiar with him living abroad, you know, go check out Google Aviv Geffen and check out his music, check out maybe some of the things he has said in the past and see where he's coming from. As he says, he was a soldier in this game, but now he has reflected. He's been able to see another side of Israeli society and recognize, bottom line, that we here are all Jews. We are all responsible for one another. We may not like the actions of one another, but Jews are not allowed. This is from the Bible, okay? I'm not one of the rabbis here on the Land of Israel Network, but a Jew is not allowed to hate another Jew. You may dislike what he does and say that I dislike that thing that he did, but you're not allowed to hate another Jew. And I think this is the ultimate example of what we can learn from Aviv, from the corona situation, thanks to Aviv Geffen and the powerful experience and the 400 messages he received from the ultra-Orthodox thanking him for recognizing what they have been going through during this corona. And on that note, I want to wish everyone out there only good. Whoever is celebrating the holiday of Shavuot this Friday, starting Thursday night and Friday, I want to wish you a Chag Sameach, a wonderful Chag. Outside of Israel, it's a two-day Chag, Friday and Saturday. No matter where you are, you're going to be celebrating. Though for those who celebrate, rather, it's a two-dayer. In Israel, it's Shavuot on Friday, then a regular Shabbat. And outside of Israel, it's a two-day Shavuot. Wishing you a Chag Sameach, only health, only good things, wherever you are in the wonderful world of ours. Get in touch with me during the week, josh@thelandofisrael.com. I decided not to interview anybody on this week's show. I just wanted to talk a little bit. Hope that's okay. On Facebook, Joshua Haston or Josh Haston Israel Advocacy and Journalism. On Twitter, at Josh Haston. On Instagram as well, at Josh Haston. Big shout out to Benjamin Bresky, engineer extraordinaire, Tabitha Epstein, for all the work she does behind the scenes. And again, just one more time, be safe out there, be healthy, and please God, we'll speak again next Monday. Shalom, shalom. A beautiful, beautiful day in Jerusalem, the eternal capital of the State of Israel and the Jewish people. Shalom.